Hello, and welcome to show number 2428 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program covering a wide variety of topics of interest to people with vision loss. I'm Nancy Goodman Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. That was a sample of today's guest playing J.S. Bach's Partita No. 1 in B minor, Saraband. And she'll be explaining in this episode what it takes for her to make that music.
Julia LeGrand is a blind violinist and disability advocate who is currently studying at the New England Conservatory. We'll talk with Julia about her unique approach to learning music, her experiences as a blind musician, her journey towards a successful career in musical performance, and how she uses her platform for advocacy work. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Julia LeGrand.
My tip would be to connect with a network of people who have different expertise from you. As I have grown in my musical journey and realized increasingly how little I know, turning to blind musicians who are older than me and who have experience that I don't, and turning to other disabled musicians who have more experience than me, has been so helpful. And I am really lucky that I've had so many people who have been willing to talk to me and answer all my questions. And my advice would just be to seek out those people, because it isn't necessary, or I think even desirable, to try to do everything oneself. And I think plugging into community and community resources is so important.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
ListenLater.net. An online service that transforms articles, documents, and blog posts into podcast episodes using AI with human-like narration. These episodes are accessible in any podcast app. More information is at listenlater.net.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Let's start by meeting Julia.
Hi, I am Julia LeGrand. I am a violinist and disability advocate from Grand Rapids, Michigan, currently attending school in Boston, and I'm so excited to be part of the show today.
So you said you're a disability advocate. Do you have a disability yourself?
Yes, I am blind.
So you're pretty young. You're still at conservatory. Is this something that you've been blind since birth or youth or what?
Yeah, I am 20 and I have been blind for my whole life. I was born with more vision than I have now. So I have lost vision throughout life, but I was born legally blind. My first surgery was the day I was born. So it's always been a big part of my life. And music, I started when I was about 5, so music has also pretty much always been a big part of my life as well.
So it sounds like you have a little bit of vision. Do you use it for navigation, or can you read, or do you use Braille or other assistive devices?
I have some light perception in one eye, but I kind of say that I have no usable vision. So I am a big believer in Braille. I use Braille for just about everything in my life, really. But I also use a variety of other screen reader and other assistive technologies. I also do use a guide dog.
And what's your guide dog's name?
His name is Otto.
Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is Julia LeGrand's development into a skilled violinist and how she uses her platform to advocate for disability rights and awareness.
Well, Julia, in the intro, you told us that you got interested in music at the age of 5 and you had some partial vision. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey and how you got interested in music?
I just started music because my mom asked me if I wanted to play the violin, and I think I had a fair amount of exposure to music before that because my parents both love music, but that's kind of when music became a huge part of my life, and I didn't really know how much work it would involve, so I said yes, and I'm very glad I did. I think it took me a while to get serious about music, but I kind of became serious probably partway through middle school, I would say. And I started with the Suzuki method, which emphasizes everyone learning by ear. So at the beginning of my musical journey, I at least was not very aware of how my blindness affected my music learning, partly because I had great teachers who were totally just willing to accommodate me and didn't make a big deal out of it at all. And partly because the peers in my program weren't reading music either, even though they recited.
Is that one of the contributing factors to your decision to play violin, that it's so commonly taught with the Suzuki method to young kids?
I definitely think that was a contributing factor. It was really important to my parents to give me an opportunity to participate in an activity where I could feel like I was kind of had a level playing field with my sighted peers, and to really have the space to connect with my sighted peers in ways that might be a little less bound by sort of normative expectations. And they thought that music, and particularly with the Suzuki method, learning music would be a way I could really connect on just a more fundamental level, where sort of social cues that might be a bit more confusing for me to pick up on as a blind child would be less of a big deal.
Now, as you got more serious about music, I assume you had to learn to read music in some form, and Braille music is kind of tricky and you can't read the music while you're playing. How did that all work as you grew older?
Yeah, it's a journey I think I'm still on, trying to figure out what's the best way to learn music. I did learn Braille music when I was about 9 or 10, but I never got super fluent, I would say. I've kind of had points in my life where I really invest in trying to get much faster at Braille music, and points in my life where I focused less on it. Overall, I use a combination of Braille music and learning by ear. So some of my music, I will listen to a recording, or I may listen to someone playing it on the piano so that I can hear the music away from the violin and I'm less influenced by people's interpretations. I also listen to music in electronic files on what's called MIDI output, and so I can get a sense of the music with no human interpretation. And in those formats, I can also kind of go character by character almost and read all the attributes of music. But then I also do use some Braille music. But all of those methods require me to memorize everything before I play it.
Yeah, I found that being a real problem when I was a child. I was in high school and was partially sighted. I could see the music, but I had to read it so close when I played the piano that I couldn't play and read at the same time. And memorizing classical music can be quite a chore. By the time I memorized it, I was almost sick of the music and didn't want to make it a real piece of art.
Yeah, I think that balance is something that I'm still wrestling with. There are lots of blind classical musicians doing amazing things, and there are so many ways in which I think needing to memorize the music gives you a different or a better sense of it, sometimes than sighted peers can get away with, because I think it can be easier to play music you kind of know, whereas that's just not an option for me. I have to really, really know it if I'm going to play it. And so I think that can be an advantage, but it also really comes at a cost of time. And I, for that reason, really do have to prioritize quality over quantity. And in certain settings, I think that's easier than in other settings. So while there are blind musicians who play in orchestra, and while that's certainly possible, I've found that for me, it doesn't feel the most fulfilling because the time required for memorizing orchestra music doesn't always feel like the best fit, I guess, for how I want to spend my time in music. And I think it can even complicate smaller group playing too, where the expectation is that my peers do not need to memorize the music. And that is something I think I'm continuing to wrestle with, but I think it's something that all blind musicians have to deal with in some form or other. And so I look forward to seeing where those questions will take me in the future.
So you play mostly solo and small group music?
Yeah, I play a lot of music with small groups and solo. I love playing with other people. It's so rewarding to build musical connections and build musical friendships. But it can also be fun to play solo. I think there's an advantage to both. And it's also really special to play with orchestra as a soloist. That can be a really special experience to play in a huge group of people in a different role than as part of the orchestra. So there are so many ways to play and to enjoy music.
I understand you have a very exciting performance coming up in a week or two. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm so excited to be performing at the Kennedy Center on July 27. I am very honored to be one of the winners of this year's International Young Musicians Program, which is a program put on by BSA at the Kennedy Center. And part of that program is a chance to perform. And so I'm really excited.
Will you be playing solo or with a group?
I will be playing one piece by myself, and I will be playing one piece with a pianist. I'll be playing a movement of a sonata with a pianist.
Well, that is very exciting.
When you're playing in a large group like that, there are certain signals that the conductor and other people around are giving. How do you deal with some of that?
I think that a lot of those signals, it's possible to pick up on the non-visual aspects of them. So one thing that lots of classical musicians, regardless of sight, will talk about a lot is the importance of kind of feeling things together, which is really hard to describe. Part of it is hearing breath. So hearing how people breathe gives a lot of information about when they're going to play, this sort of approach when they start playing. And then I do feel like there's almost an extra element on top of that that isn't just hearing, but is some sort of coordination that's kind of how you move, how sort of the air around you moves, that you kind of have a sense of these things, even if you aren't seeing the visual side of those cues. And that all sounds a bit vague, but it doesn't feel vague when you're part of it.
So if you're sitting in an orchestra and you're surrounded by other violin players, you can, even without seeing them, sense when everybody around you picks up their bow and gets ready to start.
When we're starting to play, I can usually sense kind of how exactly everyone is coming in together. There are some aspects of the performance, like maybe everyone picking up their instruments, that are a little less tied to the music and a little more important to kind of get visually right to blend in with the group, even if they're not actually tied to the sound. And so sometimes I might get a little tap on the foot from my stand partner just to make sure I'm lining up the sort of the choreography pieces.
It almost sounds like that in some respects, there are some advantages to being blind or visually impaired in a group like that. I can imagine some sighted people being so focused on the conductor that they're not quite as attuned to the people around them and how the music's being played.
I definitely think it gives me a different perspective And that's an exciting thing to be able to explore and to talk about with my sighted colleagues as well. I think it can be a fun conversation starter to really dig into how we are experiencing music differently. Because I do think that blindness gives a unique lens on music, for sure.
Are there other students with disabilities at the New England Conservatory?
There definitely are. There isn't, I wouldn't say, a huge culture of coming together around disability, but I do have some friends with disabilities, and I have been able to do some wonderful collaborations with students both at New England Conservatory and also at Berklee College of Music, which is right down the road. And so we've been able to come together as disabled music students for some great concerts throughout this year, and I hope to continue that next year.
Now, I'm guessing that with the people that you generally work with in the conservatory or in your community, that things work pretty smoothly. They know how you operate, and maybe it's a little bit differently, but that's okay. What happens when you come to a new orchestra outside town and they haven't seen you before? What kind of reception do you get from the conductor or the staff, other performers?
I think that people in classical music are generally really welcoming and open, but I definitely think that there's a lack of knowledge about what accommodations I need and how I can operate. I think sometimes there are expectations that because I can't read the score, I will not know the music as well, or because I am not interacting with the music in real time, I will have sort of less ability to contribute to the group, or that I, need no accommodations. And there's sort of, I think, a middle ground is necessary to understand that I can contribute and I do have a unique way of understanding music. But at the same time, I do, you know, need materials in advance, and I do approach things in a bit of a different way. That means I need some collaboration as well from the people I'm working with. So I think it's always a bit of really being able to explain my needs and what I can contribute and what I also need to be able to access the musicianship that I can bring.
We have heard from many people in many fields that they always needed to learn to advocate for themselves, to get whatever materials ahead of time.
Definitely.
But you said when you described yourself, you referred to yourself as a disability advocate as well as a musician. Can you talk about that a little?
Speaking about disability has been something that's become really important to me over the past couple of years. I would say when I was a junior in high school, my kind of interest got started. I was very lucky to have the opportunity to appear on the NPR show From the Top. And this show features young classical musicians, and I was able to perform a piece and get an interview on the show. And it kind of opened me up to how many questions people have about blind musicianship and the lack of information that there really is in a lot of mainstream media about disability and music. And it got me really excited to talk more about disability and music together, but also about my experiences of disability more broadly, my thoughts and opinions on accessibility based on the experiences I've had. And it's made me interested in getting more involved in disability advocacy more broadly, for sure.
I understand also, through the auspices of From the Top, you were on the other side of the microphone doing a very exciting interview, conducting the interview.
Yeah, so after I was on the show in 2021, I paid attention to a lot of their initiatives and learned that I had been the first blind violinist that appeared on the show. And while they had lots of wonderful programming around other aspects of diversity, there was no sort of special lens on disability. And I thought that an episode exploring music and disability would be a great project. And so I brought that to From the Top. And I wasn't really expecting them to want to work with my idea, but it's really important to them that they are youth-led. And so even though I felt a bit silly as a 17-year-old proposing this idea to them, they were really enthusiastic and asked me to be a big part of putting the show together. So from the beginning, I was really involved in the recruitment process, in crafting the promotional language. I co-hosted all of the interviews with the young disabled musicians we had on the show. And then I was also able to interview Itzhak Perlman. And that interview I conducted largely by myself, which was very exciting and a little bit nerve-wracking. I had wonderful support from the Top the whole time, which was really incredible. And it was such an honor to be able to talk to someone who I have looked up to for such a long time, not only for his excellence on the violin, but also for the disability advocacy he has done and how he has made that a part of his career as well.
Did you get any good advice from him?
I think what stuck out to me most about our conversation was the way he persisted in the face of many people really believing that his disability would make it impossible for him to have a career. And I think now that he has the incredible career he does, it seems so ridiculous to think that people would ever have said that to him. And it's just an amazing thing, I think, how so many disabled musicians have figured out how to create incredible, innovative careers, even when they are being told by the able-bodied world that they shouldn't be able to do that. And that is just an exciting thing. And being reminded of that on such a big scale from Mr. Perlman was just incredible.
His disability is due to having polio as a child, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
So he's very lucky, and surprisingly so, that he's able to have the kind of dexterity it requires to be a world-class musician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his arms, I don't think, were very affected. It was, you know, his legs were affected, so he does play sitting down, and he uses a scooter. So in some senses, he doesn't code as the traditional concert violinist who stands up in front of the orchestra to play. But, you know, he has one of the most incredible sounds on the violin. So it's just remarkable how much creativity and innovation there is in the music and disability space.
Well, Julia, what are your long-term aspirations in terms of music and or a career?
Oof, that's definitely a big question. I want performance to be a big part of my career going forward. I really believe in bringing beauty into the world through music. And I think that that is one of the things that also brings me a lot of joy. And so I want to continue doing that as a soloist and in chamber music and just in as many ways as I possibly can in as many different performance settings as I can, connecting with different audiences across different communities. That's really important to me. And so is continuing my work as a disability advocate. I think that there is still so much that can be done to make it be easier and sort of more user-friendly for disabled young people to enter in to classical music in particular and just sort of the music scene more broadly. And I really want to help young disabled people understand the joys of music, because I think sometimes the barriers can feel insurmountable. And even though there are so many disabled people, you know, working around those perceived barriers, I think, you know, the more we can do to make music an obviously accessible space, and the more we can do to really just increase access, the better. And so I want to continue to be involved in changing perceptions around music and disability and helping kind of reshape the music industry alongside so many fantastic music and disability advocates who are just doing incredible work.
Well, we wish you good luck in pursuing that goal.
Thank you.
And you're already, even at a fairly young age, doing a lot to raise awareness that somebody who, as you put it, has no usable vision at all is able to be a successful performer. That's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about organizations that support musicians with visual and other impairments, and how to contact Julia LeGrand.
Well, Julia, if people want to connect with you or find out more about you, where would you direct them?
I would direct them to my Instagram, which is Julia LeGrand Violin, and that is LeGrand is spelled LAGRAND, which can be a bit surprising. Or I would also direct them to my website, which is julialegrand.com, my Facebook, which is just Julia LeGrand, or you can reach out to me directly at julialegrand@gmail.com.
Are there any umbrella organizations that you would direct people to that you may have benefited from getting information from talking about performing music with a disability?
There are a lot of different resources available from different organizations. I would say a couple organizations that have been of particular help to me would be the Bella Music Foundation, which is a relatively new organization helping support blind musicians. Also, I have been very involved with the National Federation of the Blind Performing Arts Division, which helps connect blind performers with each other and raise expectations for blind performers. I am also a member of RAMPT, which is Recording Artists and Music Professionals with Disabilities, which is another young organization that has grown incredibly quickly into a great network for advocacy and for really changing how disability is viewed in the music industry.
Oh, well, that's a big help to anybody who wants to get started. Thank you.
And if you click on the link to episode 2428, which is this episode, you'll find all of that contact information. And we'll also have a link to the performance that Julia will be doing at the Kennedy Center on July 27th. So look for that in the show notes.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about how you can identify your medications. Do you struggle to read prescription labels? If so, you should know that Envision America partners with many pharmacies to provide talking prescription labels, as well as labels in Braille or large print, at no additional cost to you. We'll talk with Jenna Reed, Marketing Director at Envision America, about the service and how it works.
Thanks for joining us this week, and we hope to catch you all next week.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.